Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. The ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
And welcome back to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson. That's Barton Simmons. The game week has finally arrived, Barton.
Game week!
It's here. This is as fired up as you can possibly get. Monday afternoon, we are recording. We have been recording after an absolute onslaught of news. If you're chasing the quick headlines, there's plenty of them up on CBSSports.com, and they're talking about it on CBS Sports HQ. Depth charts were released this week, Barton. It feels real.
I love depth chart week. Like I'm such a personnel geek that like depth chart week is that's my jam, man. So it's fun to analyze these depth charts, figure out who's third string left tackle and all that nonsense. But coaches are showing their hands. They're announcing starters. I mean, if Jim Harbaugh is announcing a quarterback starter, then what excuse do you have, coach of wherever the hell you're coming from? Like, everybody's got to put their cards on the table if Harbaugh's announced his starter like a week in advance. So this is fun. We're recording right now, Monday afternoon. We'll get into all the news. I think probably fair to like give people a heads up. Like, we're hoping to bring Monday morning recap pods for the season. Nothing to recap, so no rush on this Monday morning. And then, you know, we'll have the locks pod Thursday and then a couple other pods during the week. But this is our last week where we don't have something to discuss from the weekend, and it's all preview. So should be fun.
And we also, we're going to have Danny Cannell joining us later this week. We've got the Locks podcast, a lot of good things that we're excited about. But we do have some things to react to. Can you give me three two-sentence or less takeaways from what we saw in Hawaii, Colorado State, and let's say Wyoming, New Mexico State?
Oh yeah, I forgot. Like almost, we do have something to react to. There were games. My takeaways from the week. Yeah, I have three. I'll give you three. One is, and look, I'm not going to start counting my winnings on my Wyoming over bet yet. We got a notch on our belt. We got a scalp on the wall, but I was very encouraged by Wyoming's defensive front seven. Really defensive line. Like, and not that that was a surprise, but 91, 93, 96. Those three guys are good.
Yes.
And 91, the Carl Granderson kid is NFL good. And shoot, I don't know. The others might be NFL good too, because I never heard of them, but they were Paul. And so that's going to be like the Mountain West going to be fun. That's a good team, I think. Washington State next week, man, watch out. I'm sure Wyoming didn't show all their cards.
Oh no,
you know that's a defensive line that could give Washington State some problems. I'm very interested in that game. So that's one. Two is I wish I had thought. I think Clay Travis tweet out that he was on Colorado State -17 against Hawaii. And, you know, I can't claim this because I didn't say anything publicly, but in my head I was like, I don't know if that's the right call there, Clay. Because, like, I think Colorado State, like, this might be a little bit of a step back year for Mike Bobo. And as good as Preston Williams looked at times, as good as KJ Carter Samuels looked at times, that defense wasn't stopping anybody. So I'm a little worried about Colorado State, and I'm eyeing that Colorado State line for week one this weekend. And then last one, and I don't know if you like, sorry if I'm bogarting it here, but last one is, how about Rice like running the Stanford stuff. Rice is, I feel like we're used to seeing Rice as sort of this, the basketball and grass stuff. And Rice is out there running like smash mouth, you know, 23 personnel, like tight end motion stuff. And it was, that's sort of now gotten to be where that's, since that's not the common stuff.
Like that's the
stuff
zag.
That's fun to watch, you know, yeah, it's sort of like, oh, what's this? This is cool. So I got a little taste of all of them. I enjoyed
Number one, and the thing that has me the most excited is that the run and shoot's back at Hawaii. Cole McDonald with 3 touchdowns through the air, 400 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, and 96 yards on the ground. I agree with you. Colorado State's defense might be a problem, but the switch back and really just sort of going all in on the style that June Jones brought so much success to Hawaii to over about the course of a decade, that made me very, very excited. Number two takeaway, I got to give credit to our boy Tom Fornelli, who will be joining us on the Locks podcast. He had the comment that the Wyoming offense, he loves Craig Bowl's offenses because he feels like Craig Bowl just has a Tecmo Bowl 5-play offense with perfect execution. That everything they run is just executed to perfection. It's not that complicated, but you're not going to be able to stop it. And then number three, let's see. Yeah, Colorado State might be really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, like that's not a, like you got to be good in that league. Like you got to be good. You can't skate by. This isn't the Sun Belt where you can skate by and be in not terrible and go 8-4. You got to be pretty dang good to put together a decent record in that league. So Mike Bobo may have missed his window to get out of Colorado State this past cycle, because I feel like it's going to be this year and then a couple more build up years to get back to kind of what they did last year.
Yeah, I agree. Also, yeah, the students, not, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. Colorado State has played on the week zero, I think maybe 3 out of the last 4 years or something like that. Maybe let's sit one out. Hey, coach.
Let's watch for a weekend. You know?
Yeah. All right, let's get into the news of the weekend, news of the day. Let's start with Kelly Bryant being named the starting quarterback at Clemson. How, and you have championed Trevor Lawrence, does this change at all your expectations, the fact that KB being the first quarterback out there, that has been made official? Does that change at all how much you think we'll see Trevor Lawrence?
No, this is in line with my expectations. So I want to make it clear what my expectations are for Clemson. Kelly Bryant is the starter and will be the starter as long as they don't need Trevor Lawrence. At some point, they will need Trevor Lawrence because Kelly Bryant is not good enough to win every single game on the schedule. He doesn't add enough of a throw element to their offense. He doesn't threaten great defenses. So at some point, they'll have to make a switch to win the football game. And at that point, when they make the switch to win the football game and Trevor Lawrence gets in, it will be his job moving forward. And I think that point might not come until at Florida State, October 27th.
Yeah.
But I think there is a chance that that point comes September 8th at Texas A&M. Like if Texas A&M is good, I mean, Kyle Field's a tough place to play, and they get bogged down in a offense that has no vertical threat. I mean, you know, A&M is gonna make them play left-handed, and if that happens, then look, Trevor Lawrence, they're going to need him. If they want to win a national championship, let me put it this way. I just don't see Clemson winning a national championship with Kelly Bryant at quarterback. There's too many other good teams in college football that can squeeze a loss out of them. I think they need Trevor Lawrence to be the guy for them to win a national title. And I think at some point in the season, he takes over when they have to go to him.
Oh, so do you? But that is still built within the idea that this is a one or the other, right? Like, because I am opening up to the idea that we are going to see at Clemson and that we are going to see at Notre Dame and that we might see to some extent even at Georgia and that we are definitely going to see at Alabama some just straight up two quarterback systems, whether it is rotating in and out, whether it is situational. I think that we will see Kelly Bryant at some point will be used in certain situations where they would prefer not to have Trevor Lawrence. Then Trevor Lawrence is going to come in and he's going to take the top off the defense and it's going to create some issues, especially when Kelly Bryant does all of a sudden get a wide open shot down the field or when Trevor Lawrence, because they're sitting too far back, is able to eat a defense up underneath.
I think I have gravitated towards there being a lot of two quarterback systems in college football this year relative to what we're used to. So yeah, I do think that. I think that even this could always be a two quarterback system, even after Trevor Lawrence wins the job.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think Kelly Bryant's going away.
Yeah. But Dabo Sweeney is the same guy that started Cole Stout over Deshaun Watson, and Kelly Bryant is better than Cole Stout.
Right.
Probably.
No, hey. Kelly Bryant.
I'm trying to think about if I'm misremembering Cole Stout, because that guy played like 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Or three.
He was between Taj Boyd and Deshaun Watson, and he had a couple of great games, and he was the quarterback of Clemson teams that were getting double-digit wins and just finishing behind the Jameis teams.
I think it's a little like I have a hard time figuring out whether Kelly Bryant is – I can't decide if I'm overestimating or underestimating Kelly Bryant. Like, is he – he might very well be terrible.
I don't think that's the case.
Do you know what I mean, though? He is athletic at the least. And I think he is capable at the least because he's shown it. Like, he can operate within the system. He can hit the throws he's supposed to hit. But he's not good down the field. And I wonder what Kelly Bryant would look like if he were, I don't know, at Florida last year. Would he be Felipe Franks? They're different style players, but would he be that type of guy that people like? Would that be the perception of him? Like, I just think because of the way they, because of how good of a job they do in preparing them and giving them a chance to be successful, I'm not trying to say he is bad. I'm just trying to say, like, I think he's a weird quarterback that it's hard to really put a stamp on, like put a label on. Like, I just think he's a little bit in no man's land.
I will go back to the ACC championship game against Miami, and I will say that that is what I will hold up as an example of Kelly Bryant being a good quarterback against quality competition, because he definitely did rack up some big stats. And, you know, when he throws a 5-yard pass that gets broken for a 60-yard touchdown, you know, all of a sudden you think things will get thrown off a little bit. But I thought that against a very good Miami defense that was well prepared for Clemson, I thought that that was his best game of the season. And, you know, the very next game, he got swallowed alive by Alabama. So it is easy for us to think about Kelly Bryant as the player that got swallowed alive by Alabama.
That's our last taste in our mouth.
Right. I think the game before that was one of his best of the season. And if you take that and think about that as Kelly Bryant's ceiling, somebody who can lead a 30-point win against, I mean, granted, that Miami offense was being held together by all of the medical tape in South Florida. But like that was still a very good Miami defense, and I thought Kelly Bryant did a good job against them. They weren't getting anything from their running back or their rushing game, and he was able to lead them to success.
Here's what Kelly Bryant is, and then we'll move on to the next quarterback. But I think what he is a quarterback that can lean on you and complement a suffocating defense, and he can just get better as the game goes on. If you give him a lot of chances, he's going to beat you. And he's going to get some yards on the ground. Like, he can just wear you down at quarterback. And if you give him too many opportunities, he will beat you. But if you got to go blow for blow, strike for strike, Kelly Bryant's going to have a hard time being that guy, I think. And that's who Trevor Lawrence can be.
Can be. Right. And it does help for both of them having that defense.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. All right, JT Daniels, starting quarterback at USC. Ryan Abraham tipped his hand during our Around the World. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that, we had a great time chatting with five of 24/7 Sports' finest voices. Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com mentioned that he would be the first freshman quarterback since Matt Barkley. And is it only two? Barkley and Daniels, maybe, to start as a freshman for the season opener, but he's the best quarterback of all time, as we've decided. JT Daniels, QB1, no surprise here. How does the announcement, does it change at all sort of the way you're looking at the Trojans? And we're going to have our expert picks coming up, and so I'm expecting...
We should have teased that earlier, I guess. Like, we're going to come with all of our playoff, national champion, Heisman, all those stuff.
So,
right?
Is JT Daniels also your Heisman Trophy winner?
Of course. No, he's not.
We've had redshirt freshmen win the Heisman Trophy. You know who's breaking down the next barrier? True freshman, right. JT Daniels.
Right. So I don't want to get too much into my JT Daniels analysis because it'll spoil some of my predictions later in the show. Foreshadowing there, but this is like the least surprise. As crazy as it sounds, the kid that skipped his senior year in high school is the least surprising true freshman starter
in the country.
Cycle, yeah. And I always have to add the caveat, like, let's make sure that we are contextualizing this correctly. He missed his senior year in high school. Yes, he had to speed up things academically, but he's like 19 years old. He was held back earlier in his process, and so let's not. This isn't like a 16-year-old.
Are you going to redshirt your kids?
I've got daughters, so I think it's less.
Oh, I'm talking about just the great. You know the. Like, no, I know. Do kindergarten,
I know, but
twice.
Saying, like, if I had sons, I would redshirt them. Mm. But with daughters, I think it's more about just. Plus, my daughters are psychos, and I can't imagine like one additional year of them in the house.
So we're just racing to the finish line.
Yeah, like, I'm already like counting down to what I have, like 16 years left. All right. But no, I think JT Daniels is as prepared for this as really, I don't know, maybe any true freshman quarterback that he's seen in a while.
I definitely threw out the reclassification as a point of emphasis once you informed me that he was already old for his grade. You know, like, I'm kind of like, all right, well, in terms of how many times he's been on this rock around the sun, then he's like, he is but so many years old. Now, there was a really good profile of him. I believe it might have been in The Athletic that sort of introduced him to what I read as a real introspective guy.
There's been a bunch of, like, that's been a hot, you know, like, everybody, all the feature writers, like, have taken their swings at the JT Daniels profile this offseason.
Maybe on a show that's way too inside media, we can power rank the JT Daniels profiles. But yes. Anyway, this seems like an interesting guy, and a guy that I'm fascinated to see how he plays out, because, you know, as Ryan Abraham mentioned, this is, we've got to be looking at this as part of a bigger picture where JT Daniels at some point in his career is probably going to be expected to deliver national title contention. I would say from the outside, that is definitely not what the expectation is going into 2018.
I agree. I'm going to leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, because we don't want to spoil it.
We have more thoughts on USC.
I was a little bit surprised. We had DeAndre Francois named the starting quarterback at Florida State. That is how things had been trending for the last week or so. I had heard that in practices, Francois was a little bit more accurate, but Blackman still was impressive because of his confidence and his charisma. What's your thought here? Because I've got another Francois note that I think is important for Florida State as a whole.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, the more this played out, the more it seemed like this was the way it was trending. I think in hindsight, now that the decision is in, like it makes a world of sense. Like I feel like Blackman would have had to be clearly the better to make this move. I mean, think about last year. It's really like their collapse was kind of all about Francois being injured. And now, I mean, that's the guy that there's huge expectations for. It was a potential two and done guy as a redshirt sophomore. And then he got hurt and things got thrown up in the air and the season collapsed. And now he comes back and you know what? There's spacing. He's a redshirt junior now. And there's spacing between him and James Blackman. And hey, maybe they can even snag another redshirt year for James Blackman. Neither of them are like significantly more athletic than the other. Francois is probably more durable than James Blackman. And Francois has taken some licks in his 2 years as a quarterback.
Yeah.
Or what? One in a game.
One in a game. But that previous year, Florida State's offensive line couldn't block anybody, and he was just getting crushed.
Yeah, so I mean, this dude's like, I think, like let's not forget how bullish we were as a football community on DeAndre Francois coming into last season. So I think this makes plenty of sense.
Florida State was the number 3 team in the country going into last year.
Yeah, man.
Florida State, not Clemson, was picked to win the ACC, and in yep. DeAndre Francois was 100%. A very, very big part of that. And before he got knocked out of that Alabama game, I mean, I remember there was one drive, maybe even two, where he started picking on the Alabama cornerbacks. Like, they were starting to get some one-on-one coverage, and he was making a couple throws that kind of had you heated up to think it was going to be a good game. Then he got crushed, and Florida State couldn't move the ball. But I think that DeAndre Francois winning the quarterback battle is one of the best representations of the fact that what we had heard is that Willie Taggart and his staff and Walt Bell, the offensive coordinator, they were wiping the slate clean with everybody. So all of the, remember the tweets from DeAndre when he was hurt, and remember he wasn't really with the team during some of his recovery, and he and his father both were a little bit, you know, they weren't liking the way that things were going with Jimbo Fisher. And then he gets caught up in the marijuana sting in Tallahassee. And you know what? If DeAndre Francois, if they really were wiping the slate clean and allowing everyone to just go and get it and start over, I mean, it looks like Francois getting that starting quarterback role back and not hearing anything negative in terms of his relationship with his players or his relationship with the coaching staff, they have given this entire roster an opportunity to start over after what was just a disappointing and I would assume toxic season behind the scenes. And so, you know, if that trickles out to the rest of the roster, a very talented roster, you know, maybe you're starting to rethink where Florida State's going to be lining up against the best teams on their schedule.
Look, so every year we have, when the new coaches take over, and this is a bigger commentary on Florida State than the quarterback battle here, but every year when you have coaches take over teams, it's always like the outgoing staff is always like, man, we sure did leave things loaded for those guys. And the incoming staff, and it doesn't matter where it is, but this is always like the incoming staff is always like, man, we got some work to do. We gotta turn over the roster. We gotta get this, like, you know, like everyone is always like they wanna pump up what they left and underplay what they inherited to make them look good.
Right.
At the buzz out of Florida State that I've heard is that Florida State's, the Willie Taggart staff is excited about the roster they inherited. And for a roster that just went 7-6, like it'd be easy for them to say like, I don't know, we got some talent, but man, it was a mess when they left here. Like that would be a very easy thing to get away with saying. But what I'm hearing that the mentality is over there is, man, they did us a favor, man. They left us some talent.
Yes.
They redshirted some of these guys. You know, hey, they got the quarterback got hurt game one. What'd you expect? You know, things fell apart. Quarterback got hurt game one. Hey, we're gonna be all right. So I just think Florida State is I like the closer we get to the weekend, the more I'm thinking like, man, Florida State, who can they not beat?
Why can't they beat Clemson?
Yeah. So I think the DeAndre Francois news doesn't, if anything, emboldens that, because look, I have my visions of DeAndre Francois are tough guy, gone through a lot of beatings back there under center with some bad offensive lines, and like my vision of him is this controlled, talented, really good quarterback. My visions of James Blackman are skinny, young, talented, but long ways to go quarterback. Right? Like, is it like, don't you just feel safer, like in the comforting arms of DeAndre Francois than you do of James Blackman? You know what I mean? Like, James Blackman, I feel like if he's the quarterback, I'm like, let's hope for the best.
I
think we got a really good shot, but Francois just feels more secure.
I'll agree with the premise, and I'll sway from a full commitment to being held in the loving arms of DeAndre Francois. I think this is good. What do you have? We're gonna get to locks and shoot. Well, by the time we're recapping Saturday's games, we probably are gonna have a full preview. But I have found myself in the process of going through the Francois news and preparing for today's show, very, very excited for that Monday night Florida State Virginia Tech game.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Let's go to Nebraska. Adrian Martinez, freshman quarterback. Barton, you've been talking about him. He seems like he's pretty ideal for running what Scott Frost wants, and we've already spoken at length about the talent that they have at wide receiver. Was this a surprise or any big takeaways for you on that front?
Yeah, new age coach Scott Frost not being shackled by the tradition of playing the upperclassmen just to salvage depth chart integrity and whatever that, you know, look, all these guys all over the country, you know, Nick Saban playing the upperclassman Jalen Hurts last year over a guy who, look, in my opinion, is better in Tua. Clemson starting Kelly Bryant over a guy who, in my opinion, is better in Trevor Lawrence. You know, it's very defensible to start Tristan Jebbia and give your true freshman some time to maybe go and win that job or earn that job. But he's starting who's probably the right move. Like, he's starting the better quarterback, depth chart be damned. And Tristan Jebbia didn't show up to practice today on Monday, is according to reports, and is reportedly considering transferring. Well, tally ho, buddy. Like, you know what? If you're not like, if that's the price I have to pay to play the better quarterback, that's the price I'm going to pay. And I don't know. Maybe this is my blind Scott Frost affection, but I like it. I just like rolling with the better guy. And I think this Nebraska offense is better with Adrian Martinez, and he is getting a lot of really rave reviews right now from a lot of different angles.
I know. There's a lot of confidence coming from Lincoln right now.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, I'm trying to temper the siren song here. I'm trying to temper my enthusiasm, but I like Nebraska too.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one of those where it's easy for us to jump on board, it's easy for those who are right in next to it. Everything positive is going to result in reporting that which is positive, because it's going to continue to gain attention. But as we're starting to see the ebbs and flows of where the buzz is and where there seems to be a lot of confidence, there is surging confidence coming from the Cornhuskers camp.
And by the way, they've got a third string guy who's actually from Middle Tennessee originally, but he came from JUCO, who's a walk on named Andrew Bunch, who's a pretty he's a good player too. Like, so if Tristan Jeb, like, good meaning serviceable, I think that he is respected as a serviceable option at quarterback. So if Jebbia decides to transfer, and again, I don't I think that red shirt, I guess he did red shirt last year, so he burned that red shirt opportunity. But I think Nebraska isn't kind of in some dire situation if they're down to just two quarterbacks.
Speaking of red shirt, reports in live real time. I'll come up with a breaking news soundbite at some point. Joe Burrow will be introduced as LSU, or it will be announced by Ed Orgeron at a team meeting. Joe Burrow will be the starting quarterback. This is not a huge surprise. One note from Ross Dellinger that I thought was interesting is that Miles Brennan might redshirt. Said he's expected to play, but if he doesn't play in more than four games, Brennan could take a redshirt. The quarterback room at LSU is very, very thin. Barton, it sounds to me like they are really relying on Joe Burrow to not only be good, but stay healthy.
Yes, Joe Burrow, a.k.a. fifth-year Danny Etling per Shea Dixon last week. So, I mean, I think that would be the best-case scenario for Miles Brennan because, like, I think he played sort of as a – like, last year he played kind of as a, like
– not Danny Etling?
It was a hopeful play. Let's hope this guy can step in and give us a spark. And he didn't. But he wasn't ready yet. Like he probably shouldn't have played. I still think he's really talented. And he's I don't know what he's weighing now, but he showed up at LSU weighing about 175 pounds. And so I mean, I think that'd be great for his development because Joe Burrow's probably black next year anyways. And so then you're getting a fifth-year senior, Joe Burrow, and a redshirt sophomore, Miles Brennan, behind him. And then Miles Brennan has two more years after that where, I don't know, I feel like at that point I would trust Miles Brennan to have developed properly. I guess that's a tall order for an LSU program to typically develop that position. But I think it's a scenario I could entertain.
And on the injury front, before we get to our expert picks, Tariq Black has fractured a bone in his foot. He suffered a similar injury last season, caused him to miss 10 games. This is incredibly disappointing for Tariq Black, the promising young receiver. How do we look at Michigan's offense and Michigan in general? Is the confidence fading at all because of this one injury?
Yeah, I mean, oh man, this isn't a good one. I'm down on this injury. A, because I just like it was going to be good. It was just be fun to see Tariq Black this year because he was supposed to be their guy for last year, and he's their best receiver, and this is really disappointing. Yeah, this one stings. I mean, Nico Collins has got to step up now. I mean, he's gotten some good reviews from camp as well. A second-year guy out of Alabama. So it's time for him to show up. I mean, Donovan Peoples-Jones has got to be the one guy now, and guys like Oliver Martin have to step up. So, I mean, Michigan's got receivers, but this is just really disappointing for that offense. And it's, look, in a division, in a conference – to where there's going to be a lot of games that are won by inches. I mean, that's a couple inches that are off the roster with Tariq Black.
All right, before we get to...
One more.
Oh!
Kellen Mond.
Oh.
Starter at A&M. That surprised me a little bit.
I thought, man, who keeps telling us that Nick Starkel is going to be... Is it you? Is it me? Are we just trying to speak Nick Starkel's excellence into existence?
I don't know if I was ever speaking Nick Starkel's excellence into existence, but
Rick Neuheisel tried to tell us that Nick Starkel was a player.
Yeah, maybe that's where it all came from. I was definitely under the impression that when A&M first got there, they were like, you know what? We got a pretty good quarterback in Nick Starkel. Like that was sort of my, I don't know where I gathered that impression, but I was in somewhere along the way, I developed that belief. Now, maybe they just got into camp and Jimbo Fisher just realizes that Kellen Mond does have a better, a higher ceiling. And maybe they just think they'd rather, take their lumps with Mond and watch him develop and get better over the year. And then by the end of the season, like, they're really ready to springboard to the next season. So I don't know. That I thought that was the one of all these that we've named. Like, that was probably not that it was shocking, because it was certainly a competition. But I think that's the most surprising of all of them.
Well, before we get to our expert picks, we want to, of course, remind you that you can get winning picks, fantasy advice, all at Sportsline. They combine simulations with expert analysis to give you an edge all football season. Sportsline members, they get picks from experts, former handicappers, and computer simulations, and deep fantasy analysis covering who you should draft, add, start, and more. Plus, members have exclusive access to daily fantasy lineups from DFS millionaire Mike McClure. So join Sportsline today and get your first month for only $1 using the promo code PASS, P-A-S-S. Just go to sportsline.com/join and enter promo code PASS during payment to get Sportsline now for just $1. Terms apply. Visit sportsline.com/offer for details. All right. You want to just go ahead and go conference by conference to start?
Yes. Yeah, that works.
Let's do it. Let's start in the SEC. Who's your SEC West champ?
I've got Bama, because I think it's conceivable that Bama slips up, especially because his defense just feels thinner than we're used to. But I'm not going to be the one to pick somebody else. So I'm going to go Bama in the West.
Alabama is not going to lose two Iron Bowls in a row.
Could they lose to Mississippi State?
Yes. But even in that scenario, are you thinking that Mississippi State?
That's the second best team in the West.
I've still got Auburn as the second best team in the West.
I think Auburn's really good. I think Mississippi State's the second best team in the West.
Okay. Well, anyway, I've got Alabama as well. I think it is possible that they slip up, if not likely that they slip up. But I think that there's a better chance they take care of business on the road at Mississippi State if they've already lost to Ole Miss in like week three.
Yeah. I saw Barrett fighting off the barbarian horde. Just a phrase not meant to be taken personal, Alabama fans.
just a heads up. Don't come for me.
Whatever. But like, as he predicted, Bama losing week three at Ole Miss and still winning the conference. Like, I don't hate that pick. Like, I could see that scenario.
Jordan Tamu and AJ Brown could pick Alabama's secondary apart. That's not a crazy idea.
Yeah, not to mention DK Metcalf and DeMarcus Lodge and Dawson Knox and their loaded offensive line. I mean, if Bama's getting them week 10, I'm not really blinking. But week three, Ole Miss is still going to be, all those first teamers are going to still be healthy, and that'll be their Alamo there, you know, at home in Oxford. That's a scary game.
But I do have Alabama winning the West. Do you have the dogs out of the East?
Yeah. Once again, just because I don't have the stones to make a gutsier pick. Because I give me another couple weeks. I guess specifically, give me like another week and a half, and I will tell you if I've warmed up to picking South Carolina to beat Georgia at home. Because I think that is conceivable. And at that point, like, all bets are off. But
what are you going to learn from either one of these teams in week one, though? South Carolina's got Coastal. Georgia has Austin Peay.
Not much, but it's just like, as you, I don't know, just more time to think about it and just more time to just get some courage, you know?
Like, really meditate on the possibilities.
Yeah, take a couple shots or something. Like, you know, it's sometimes it just takes some time for me to warm up to things.
All right, what do you have? Do you have Alabama over Georgia?
Yeah, I got Alabama.
Georgia over Alabama. Bold prediction.
It goes Jake Fromm play.
It goes down in overtime.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I could listen. I'm I'm not ruling that out. Like, I think Georgia's good.
What if it's a Justin Fields enters the game at halftime?
It's
14-0 instead of 13-0. Justin Fields comes in, leads them to a 23-21 overtime victory.
There's no way that the college football world is that symmetrical. You know, like it can't be. It can't work out that perfectly.
I've got Georgia winning the SEC. It's an anti-Bama play, and it's not an anti-Bama play for anything else other than I've been making expert picks here at CBSSports.com. This is my ninth season doing it, and I'm sick of picking Bama.
Listen, man, Bama fatigue.
Bama fatigue. Let's go to the Big Ten next. In the Big Ten East, who'd you take?
Big Ten East, I picked Michigan.
Feeling a little bit worse about it after the Tariq Black news.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, yeah. I mean, it's basically, I think it's a sort of a collective four-team coin flip.
Right.
I'm not going to sit here and argue with anybody that picks any of the other four. I just happen to think this is Michigan's year to get over the hump.
I don't think it is Michigan State. I think that we've mentioned it before, and I incorrectly discussed that Michigan State, it felt like hype has been as high as it's been. That is not totally true. They have entered the year actually in the top five of a preseason AP poll. I don't think that Michigan State is going to be the team that gets through there. I think it is either Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State, and I am leaning Ohio State here, though I feel the most I think I picked Ohio State. I'm picking Ohio State, but I feel the most confident that every one of those teams is going to take a loss.
Agreed. Yes. I mean, yeah. Like, there's no one is winning the Big Ten undefeated. Like, no one, the Big Ten champion is not going to the college football playoffs with an undefeated record.
Right.
I just think that is too tall of an ask.
Especially with Wisconsin, who I'm guessing is your Big Ten West champion.
They are, yes.
With Wisconsin having to go on the road to play two Big Ten East teams away from Madison. I mean, there's no chance.
I'm not ruling them out beating both of those if they're both in Madison. You're going to go to Michigan and to Penn State and win both of them I can't get there, but I think Wisconsin is really good, and I think Wisconsin is the safest college football playoff pick of anyone in the Big Ten because you just know they'll be in the Big Ten championship game. So then, all you're doing is picking them to win one game.
But it's not considered as safe, I've got Wisconsin winning the Big Ten. I've got Wisconsin in the college football playoff. I feel like I'm on my own here.
I know, because no one's looking at it the right way. Look, if I were more of a Fornelli, like more of the Fornelli, like flock of like, just look at the numbers, man. Let the numbers speak to you. Pick, you know, find the math here. Like
find the inefficiencies.
The inefficiencies in the market. That's right. Then the pick is Wisconsin, because Wisconsin just makes the most. Like, that's, if you pick anyone else in the East, then that team has to go through that East gauntlet to even get in the Big Ten championship game. So it just makes, like, I just think everyone is so wired to pick one of those brand name teams. And they're having a hard time getting on board with Wisconsin. I didn't pick Wisconsin, but I think Wisconsin is the smartest pick because I just have to go with my gut on these things. And
you're taking Michigan.
I think my gut's going to be wrong, but I went with it anyways.
So Michigan to win the Big Ten. I've got Wisconsin to win the Big Ten. Two not Ohio State plays. So here comes the Buckeyes. That barbarian horde. Into the mentions. Let's all right. Big 12. I feel so confident that our top two teams are. Oh, actually, I don't feel totally. I feel very confident about. I feel very confident about my number one team, and I think there's about three other teams in the mix for who could meet the Oklahoma Sooners in the Big 12 championship game.
Yes, I think Oklahoma's, once again, I'm not, no one has earned my trust enough to top Oklahoma.
No one has been more consistent in the Big 12 since Colt McCoy got hurt in the championship game, but Oklahoma. Yeah.
And there's a lot of haters that are saying, all right, Lincoln Riley, do it without Baker Mayfield.
He will.
That's fair, but I just happen to think, yeah, I just happen to believe he will do it without Baker Mayfield. Like, I'm allowed to believe that also. I think Oklahoma. And I think they play – I picked Texas as my number two team. Such a brutal conference where you gotta beat somebody twice, basically. And yet I can envision a scenario where TCU is also in that championship game. But I think I trust Oklahoma.
Yeah, I've got Texas as my number two. TCU is my number two. I've got Oklahoma winning. We'll get to the college football playoff picks in just a second. All right, let's go ACC. Clemson and Miami.
Yep, Clemson, Miami, and yeah.
Any part of you want to take this another direction?
No, I just want to be like out there in the stratosphere as like a voice echoing saying, "Watch out for the Seminoles."
Yeah,
like I'm not gonna put it on paper, but I just want to win it. Like when Florida State goes ham and you know is in the college football playoffs, I just want to like. I want someone to tweet at me like, you were right. Like, oh, you called this, even though I'm not calling it.
Like, even though I'm not calling
it. I want someone to misremember this statement and at me on Twitter and say, man, you were right all along. You called it.
So Florida State key stretch at Miami. Then the at Miami is right before a week off. They come back, Wake at home, Clemson at home, then at NC State, at Notre Dame.
Yeah, they got some tough road games.
It's like if they beat Clemson, I'm hammering the Wolfpack for that hangover game.
There's no doubt. No doubt. And even if they survive that one, then Notre Dame's
then Notre Dame. Yeah, absolutely. At Notre Dame, man, such a tough schedule.
But I'll tell you, but like the thing too about one thing that I think is interesting about Miami, and I'm picking them because I just think at every position but quarterback, I love them. But last year, they had all those big matchups. Now, granted, they beat Florida State on the road, but like that Virginia Tech game was home. Notre Dame game was home. I don't know. I guess I don't know. I'm looking at their schedule now. I guess I just remember all, like a bunch of spots hitting right to where like they capitalize on all that home energy and the turnover chain nonsense. And ooh. I'm looking at their schedule this year, and they got to go LSU a neutral field at BC on a Friday night's tough. They got to go Tulane Stadium, and you know they do get Florida State at home. So I don't know. Maybe I just talked myself out of that angle to where like the home.
When you Miami is a tier better than the rest of the division, and whether or not they beat LSU and how they perform in those bigger games, the at Virginia Tech, the Florida State game, those will determine about whether or not this is a Miami team that enters the ACC championship game with a shot at the college football playoff. Because yeah. I could see that future, but I could also see a 10-2 Miami team entering the college football playoff, you know, number 8 or 9 in the country, looking like nothing more than just a final quality win for Clemson's resume.
Miami LSU is going to be one of the more compelling week one games just because of that. Like, I think we know what both teams are, but we don't really know.
Right. All right. Out in the Pac-12, who are you taking out of the North?
Washington.
Yeah. What about out of the South? Oh yeah, of course I know you're taking out of the South.
I got the Trojans out of the South.
And do you have JT Daniels and the USC Trojans defeating Washington in the Pac-12 championship game?
USC, baby, Pac-12 champs.
Wow.
I know. That one's like the more I've let that waft over me and like settle, the more I'm at ease with it. I'm very at peace with that pick.
Okay. So what does your college football playoff look like?
Alabama, Clemson, USC, and Michigan.
What a great, I mean, just ratings galore.
I know, right? what a blue blood lover. I'm on record on this podcast. We had our Facebook show, 24/7 Sports College Football Facebook show, presented by Dr. Pepper, Thursdays 11:30. Today we had it Monday, and I had to make my picks there. And the Tariq Black news, not that a wide receiver's like the end-all be-all for any team, but again, because of just sort of the margin for error being so slim in that Big Ten, I really toyed with balking on my Michigan pick and going Wisconsin instead. And I guess I still can on this pod.
I could hedge my bets.
But I just I'm gonna just to be consistent. I'm gonna go with Michigan, and I don't feel good about it. But I'm on Michigan, and I'm on USC.
My college football playoff: Clemson, Washington, Wisconsin, Georgia. And I am losing my general confidence in the Washington part of this aspect.
I mean, look, man, we're going to you and I both find out pretty dang quick how we did on this stuff.
Yeah.
Because Washington, if Washington beats Auburn, hey, chalk it up, dude. You got one in. I mean, basically, I don't expect Washington to slip up until maybe look, of course they could, but I feel if they beat Washington in SEC country, I'm sorry, if they beat Auburn in SEC country, you got to feel pretty good. And frankly, if Georgia beats South Carolina on the road in week two, then you feel pretty good about them getting to the SEC championship game. Now, they got to get through it, but you feel pretty good about them getting that opportunity. So I think by week two, you're going to be potentially feeling great about your picks.
But man, like I was looking at the lines, getting ready for doing the preliminary research on our locks, and Auburn's favored by 2.5.
Yeah, I'm picking Auburn to win. I don't know if I'm picking them to cover, but I'm picking them to win.
Man, I hate that because then you know what that means? That means I'm on the trendy dog, the team that's higher in the AP poll, but the underdog. That's just going to catch all the dumb action.
Right.
I'm relying on a public ass play for my college football playoff hopes.
But you are also on, like, I would feel better about we save all the pregame talk, but I feel better about a Chris Peterson. I feel good about Chris Peterson versus Gus Malzahn. I'll say that.
Ooh, I do like that point. All right, who's your Heisman Trophy winner?
Justin Herbert.
So we're thinking big. That's, I mean, like Justin Herbert's Heisman moment could be against Washington.
Yeah, I mean, he'll have the Herbert play is a little bit of a bet on like the rest of the country not having an obvious one. Because if there's anyone that's comparable east of the Mississippi, it's going to them because there's a little bit of a Pac-12, anti-Pac-12, anti-West Coast bias. They play the games too late, whatever. But I just think Herbert is going to be, for a team that could go 9-3 or 10-2 at Oregon, team that's going to be, they were really good with Justin Herbert last year. They averaged like 520 yards a game with Herbert. They averaged like 320 without him of offense. I mean, he's going to be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft is my current position. And that's going to be a team that, you know, catches some people's attention this year. And Mario Cristobal is going to pump him up. And so I like Herbert.
Hot take here.
Marcus Mariota, this is in that vein. Marcus Mariota won the Heisman Trophy, but a lot of it was also the fact that there wasn't really a competition. I remember Mariota's Heisman race being a runaway. There was not anybody else that was existing in the same plane as him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, there's going to be some really good running back options, but people always want to default to a quarterback. And I just, the other quarterback, I think, like, someone was, I was talking today on the Facebook show, and Trey, who's on the show with me, Trey Scott, he picked Dwayne Haskins to win the Heisman. Okay. Like, that's a, I don't hate the pick. Shea Patterson, people are loving on him. Trace McSorley, too. But that, there's going to be so many grinded out games that I don't know that those guys are going to put up the numbers necessary. I like Justin Herbert's going to put up stupid numbers. Like Baker Mayfield, he, like, that team won and he put up big numbers. Lamar Jackson, he won it when they went like 8-5. So I think that because the nature of the ball is going to be a little different out there, I think he's got a better shot than those guys that are just grinding out these tough games.
See, I am going to one of the superstar running backs, and it's built into Wisconsin winning the Big Ten, and it's definitely built into my Wisconsin in the college football playoff. I'm going Jonathan Taylor, Heisman pick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's running behind like 7 NFL offensive linemen.
Your like, reaction to my Jonathan Taylor Heisman pick is the way that is the way I've come to feel about picking Alabama. All right, sure, cool, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you picked the guy who's probably going to run for 2,000 yards. All right, cool, good luck.
Yeah, but you know what's great, Chip, is this is our last set of predictions, and we can finally start. Like, I feel like I've been predicting things for a year and a half. So we get to actually like start seeing if we're right or wrong this weekend.
What are your, have you uncorked your bold predictions throughout this?
Yeah, kind of. I think my deductive reasoning will give you my bold prediction, which is that I think two true freshman quarterbacks will be, at least two true freshman quarterbacks will be starting in the college football playoffs. So I'm betting on JT Daniels and Trevor Lawrence. If somehow Georgia sneaks in and Justin Fields has taken over the job, that wouldn't shock me either. But that's, and I don't know how bold that even is, but that's my bold prediction.
My bold predictions are very specific. Call your shot. Number one, that Georgia beats Alabama in the same building where they lost the national championship, but it's for the SEC championship, and then they're going to go get bounced in the first round of the college football playoff. Number two, that in the Ohio State-Michigan game, Michigan wins, but Ohio State's already created enough of a padding to be able to go on and win the division anyway. So Michigan finally gets that win against Ohio State, but the Buckeyes claim their place in the Big Ten championship game anyway. That's built in with the specificity of guessing that Michigan loses to Wisconsin, who, as I mentioned before, I've got winning the Big Ten. And I think Washington beats Auburn but loses to Oregon, and this might play into what you've got with the idea that Justin
Herbert...
That'll
win me my Heisman.
Yeah, that Justin Herbert could have his moment. So
yeah, I do have... I'm going to give you a bold prediction for each conference. I forgot that I wrote some of these down. Tadarian Moultrie leads the SEC in sacks. That's the sophomore at Auburn, taking over for Jeff Holland. He's the next elite pass rusher down there with all that. Like, that defensive line is so sick. Bryce Love will rush for fewer than 1,600 yards. So if there's a Bryce Love
prop
out there, I kind of like the under. I'd be curious what the number is. But, and this is, I just felt like that season last year that Bryce Love put together, it felt impossible. Like, it felt like the whole time he was doing it is like, how is this even like possible that he's doing this? As much as they were running him, and like he was playing with like sprained ankles, and it was just crazy. And so I think that there's an element of just like, all right, that was just too good to be true. A, and B, I do think there's also an element of Mike Bloomgren's gone. I think he was the guy in that room that really loved to run the rock more than anybody. And I think there'll be a temptation to let KJ Costello air it out a little bit this year. And so I just think a combination of things. I think that Bryce Love still has a great year, but it doesn't come close to the 2,200 yards.
Yeah, we are not rooting for Bryce Love to not have a successful season, but that is a very good point.
Like I could see, like, look, they sort of took their swing at the Heisman last year, and I could almost see this year being like, all right, David Shaw sort of protects him a little bit more, gives him some.
I was going to ask if you were like counting touches essentially, because that would not surprise me at all.
Put him on a pitch count.
Yes.
Yeah. So I like that one there. I can't remember if I said this on here. I think Nebraska will upset one of the four: Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State. They got all those on the schedule. I'm sure they'll be, you know, the heading into the season, they'll be considered underdogs. I bet they beat at least one of those.
Like it.
Big 12, my prediction is Jalen Hurd will be an All-American at wide receiver.
Baylor loves him.
Baylor loves him, man. Those guys love him. And look, he is a freak.
Hey.
By every definition of the word freak, Jalen Hurd is one.
Except for T. Martins.
Except for, well, I don't
called
know.
Him is so soft and terrible coming out of high school.
I guess you can't be terrible as a freak. But you can certainly be a soft freak.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you can.
So I'm just going to say, like, that surely those Baylor guys, like, aren't just totally lying.
Right.
And then my last one in the ACC is, I think Cam Akers will be in New York City for the Heisman. I'm not saying he'll win it, but I think he'll be there. He's good, man.
I think Cam Akers outrushes Bryce Love.
There you go. There's a good one. There's a good combination one.
I might have to just start throwing that around, see if I can get anybody to take the other side of it.
That's right. Yeah.
get a little handshake going. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We're all picked out, man. Like this, like we have laid them in front of you over the course of the last month. If you have not gone back to listen to our over under win totals, you all have only days to get that analysis in. It's pinned to the top of my Twitter page. It's only a couple shows back. Just consume it all. Subscribe, review, rate. We appreciate it. 5 stars only, because we try and bring you that 5-star content. Barton, like anything else we need to get out there? I mean, I'm already moving at a no up tempo, no huddle.
I got to dive into pregame film prep. I got to get back to the lab. A lot of film study to go for the big game this weekend. So yeah, this will be, it's time, man. It's here.
So make sure that you subscribe, go on over to Sportsline and check it out. You can use that promo code PASS. Barton, thank you very much.
See ya.